Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. Real estate in the form of infrastructure for transferring and storing shipments is at the center of supply chain logistics. Warehouses and distribution centers are essential for the smooth and secure flow of freight and the timely delivery of online purchases and manufacturing inputs. These facilities may be owned by carriers, shippers, ports, and terminal companies, retailers, or investors, and they play a critical role in our economy. To learn about the factors driving real estate logistics, we're joined by Christopher Caton, who is Global Head of Strategy and Analytics with Prologis, which builds and invests in logistics facilities around the world. Welcome, Chris.
Great to be with you, Joe. Thank you for having me.
So give us an overview. What's the current state of the market for warehouse and distribution space, distribution center space?
Yeah, absolutely. The market has, in fact, never been stronger. There are a couple of ways you can look at that. First would be incoming demand. The industry has grown by about 380 million square feet over the last 12 months. This is the fastest ever. The vacancy rate in the United States is 4%. Historical average over 40 years is more like double that, 8%. So there's some extreme scarcity in the business. And as a result, you're seeing pricing, the rents for these spaces, move at an incredible fast clip. We're on pace for at least 10% growth in rental rates this year. It will be the fastest ever.
That's an amazing change. What do you attribute this trend?
Yeah, there are a couple of things driving it at once. The first is the strength of demand. I think rewind 12, 18 months ago, it would have been difficult to expect to see record levels of demand. But it turns out, you know, post-COVID environment is one that requires more logistics real estate, not less. A couple of things at work there would be the growth of e-commerce, right? We now can more clearly see that we'll have 25% of goods transacted online. In fact, our e-commerce customers are very intensive users of logistics real estate as the store shelves have been transferred into logistics facilities. So e-commerce is an absolute positive catalyst. As well as beginning to see line of sight to inventory levels, right? Inventory levels are very lean. Retailers are really struggling with stockouts and the challenge around keeping customers happy. And so the importance and prioritization of supply chain for C-suites has really risen. And the idea of carrying more inventories and having a higher quality supply chain is also leading to greater focus. So for one, the demand side is part of it. But then the fact that vacancy rates are at 4%, half their historical average, that extreme scarcity, you really have to look at supply and the challenges around bringing product online. And this relates to zoning and permitting. This relates to the cost to build a new building. It relates to the demand profile that customers have. They really want facilities in urban markets and infill markets and major markets, not out in remote locations where it might be easier to build.
So in part, does this help us understand why the West Coast ports are jammed with incoming boxes from Asia? That is, there's no place to move them inland?
It's a great question. What is the bottleneck that's holding things back? In fact, we've spent some time looking at this together with our local expertise as well as state and federal government. No, we don't think the logistics facilities are a major inhibitor here, although Southern California vacancy rates are among the lowest in the world at 1.5%, so some extreme scarcity on the facility side. I think really the challenges relate to the logistics at the port and getting the boxes out of the port area. I think that's the main challenge.
So can you tell us something about your company's business? What's the nature of your work in warehousing and distribution centers?
Yes. So Prologis is the world's largest owner and developer of logistics real estate. We have nearly a billion square feet of logistics facilities in 19 countries, and that equates to roughly $170 billion in assets under management. We are also the world's largest developer of logistics real estate, going vertical on over 100 projects a year, again, across all those geographies. So we're a major owner and developer, and the key thing that makes us successful is our partnership with local communities.
So when you say partnership with local communities, that gets down to what I might call boots on the ground, putting a warehouse or a distribution center in place at a particular location. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Most of our business is operating our existing buildings, working closely with the world's leading customers in our facilities. So we absolutely are local, as you just described, both to build buildings, but also make sure that the facilities are market leading for our customers.
And so when you're building, my presumption is you're not building on speculation for the most part, but you're building for a particular customer who has specific needs?
We do both. We do both. So the market in the United States will build, call it round numbers, 300 million square feet, maybe a bit more. That's roughly what's been built lately. About 75% of that is speculative, on spec, as you described. And then the balance, about a quarter, maybe a bit less, is on build-to-suit. Our company has a little bit higher mix of build-to-suit, given our close relationship with customers, and they come to us. But irrespective of the leasing strategy, which is what the difference in those projects are, we really like to think about the second-generation user, not the first-generation user. We want to own these buildings for 50 years. We want to own them for 100 years. And irrespective of if it's a speculative building or a build-to-suit building, they are built with modern features that are suitable for that location. Modern features for a building, relate across a couple of categories, both outside the building and inside the building. Outside the building would relate to the amount of area for circulation and truck parking. So basically, we would, in industry parlance, that's coverage ratio, so how much of the land is covered by building. It's tempting to want to cover a lot of the land by building. It would seem to maximize value, but it doesn't, because then you're shorting your customers and that second-generation customer on parking or land availability for the operations outside the facility. And then inside the facility, you're going to have dock doors, you're going to have office, you may have mezzanine, you're going to need to have ceiling heights, you're going to need to have modern lights like LEDs. So there's a variety of features that are market leading today.
So when you talked about ceiling heights, are you building up in order to store more product, or are you having different floors, levels?
Yeah, the answer is both. It really depends on the use case. So for perhaps maybe a more throughput distribution, palletized distribution, you're going to build up and you're going to rack. So depending on the geography, a modern clear height could be as low as 32 feet, could be as high as more than 40 feet. When you get up to towards 40 feet in the air, a couple of things begin to become a challenge around how the sprinklers work. As well as the quality of forklifts to not tip over. So we've continued to see clear heights rise, and in some geographies like the UK, it's even higher than that. But that would be for throughput distribution. E-commerce has been one of the key growth catalysts for our industry over the last decade. That is an area where you're doing inches picking, so it's not really a forklift or palletized operation. And so you would have those mezzanine floors like you described.
In terms of picking a location in an area, what are the important factors? I mean, from what you've said already, it sounds like connection to the highway network is critical. But is there anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. Really, there's three or four use cases for a logistics facility, and it relates to where it is in the supply chain. So we were talking about Southern California. We could equally talk about New Jersey, the port markets, a category of use case, which is gateway distribution. So proximity, call it 50 miles, 75 miles from the port. These are among the largest logistics real estate markets in the world are those that are adjacent to the port markets to get internationally produced goods in. And then naturally, all the other location requirements around proximity to highway so that it is considering your drayage costs, et cetera. So that would be one use case. At the other end of the spectrum would be what we call last touch or city distribution. And there you're going to be probably doing these eaches picking a lot more focused on proximity to the end consumer. And so the location and shortening that distance to the end consumer is a critical deciding factor. And then in the middle, you have regional distribution, where that might be a little bit more of a cost-sensitive choice. You aren't necessarily pulling goods in from a port or an international destination, and the time sensitivity of distribution may be less. And so you could be in a more economic location, but still have those strong transportation links like you described at the outset. One of the unifying features, maybe two unifying features across all those location strategies, is one, access to labor. Labor scarcity is an extreme challenge. And if you're like me, you're tracking the news and you're hearing major users talk about giving raises to their employees in facilities because they're having challenges attracting workers to these facilities. And then the other is we have seen the emphasis in supply chains, both with the rise of e-commerce, as well as more recently with the importance placed on supply chain due to COVID, focus on being in major markets and shortening that distance to consumers, being able to have a resilient supply chain that meets customers where they are. So consistent requirement, location, and good labor, and a couple of different approaches based on their role in the supply chain.
So the observation I make in the Chicago metropolitan area where I am is there are some of the huge national retailers have distribution centers that are 50 or 60 or 70 miles away from the city. But if I understand what you said correctly, that's a kind of an intermediate center, and there may be something closer to the market that those same retailers use.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you could look at the Chicago market. The three largest submarkets would be the one you described is called I-80. Yeah, you can think about it as being more than an hour drive time. You can then look at I-55. You can think about that being kind of more than a half hour, but not more than an hour and a half. So an hour or a little bit less, obviously depending on the time of day there in Chicago for its famous traffic. And then you can also look at O'Hare. And then further, I think we're redefining a class that's even more infill and more urban than that. And in fact, Prologis has multiple projects focused on distributing into the greater Chicago metroplex. And you have it exactly right. And in fact, that's a good continuum. We were talking about O'Hare, as well as even more infill than that, I-55 and I-80.
What about rail connections? Are they important in some of your development efforts?
Rail requirements are periodic. So it's rare that customers need them, but when they need them, they want them. When you look across the spectrum, there are only a handful of use cases that really require it. For example, food and beverage kind of manufacturing, but a lot of them, no, rail is not central. So it's also a question.
So it's primarily trucking, and my presumption is importantly connected to the interstate network.
Exactly right, yes.
And how do you look at the future? You said you want to hold facilities for 50 or 100 years. And presumably, if we look back 50 or 100 years, utilization and requirements have changed radically. Do you do anything special to predict what's going to happen in the distant future and be prepared for it?
Yeah, Joe, for sure. That is my job description as the head of strategy at Prologis. I think there are things, when you look at it, that change all the time, and there are, in fact, things that don't change at all. We could go back to this construct of what role or where in the supply chain are the facilities. And we talked about three or four stops, for example, gateway distribution, regional distribution, and then city and last touch distribution. We also could think about the production side, which is maybe raw goods distribution into manufacturing, as well as a consolidation step between manufacturing and outbound international transportation. One thing that has been a constant for a very long time is the importance of location quality. And so you will see the majority of our portfolio concentrated in the world's 24-hour cities. New York, New Jersey, Southern California, Chicago, San Francisco, London, Paris, Tokyo, et cetera, a handful more. So we're very focused on these locations with the belief twofold. One, that they are durable locations, but equally, as we've found them to be built out, new construction of facilities need to be farther and farther from city center. So for specific, when we look at buildings built before 2010 in the greater New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania area, those facilities were on average about 30 miles from Columbus Circle. When we look at the buildings built since then, they're more than 50 miles away. And so what you have is the standing stock of facilities becoming significantly more valuable. So when you build these buildings and you happen to get an infill site, you need to build them with high-quality features that will last that, 50 years.
Do you think specifically about building flexibility into the designs?
Yeah, your word for flexibility, I think that's fair. I think we try to design them so that customers can put a wide range of improvements in. So it may be racking to the ceiling like we described earlier. It may be heavy automation around carousels or other types of automation. It may be floor stacking or eaves stacking without mezzanine. So there's a way to accommodate a wide variety of use cases within a generic box.
And your Prologis is vertically integrated, so you can deliver a turnkey package, if I understand it.
We offer a range of services. I think we're pretty focused on the way the industry has been for a long time, which is our partnership with our brokers to best serve customers. That is number one, and to have facilities and treat our customers really well. We do offer additional services, move-in packages, et cetera, under an umbrella that we call Essentials. That is really exciting, as you're describing there. And those customers that are using it are finding it really, I think, reduces the time to move in and also is economic and is gets them going and allows them to focus on their core business rather than on the real estate.
It's very, Christopher, it's particularly interesting because my sense is that a lot of us that are participants as buyers in the e-commerce market don't really think very much about how that package gets to our front porch. But the real estate end of this, it sounds to me, is absolutely critical to making these end-to-end movements work. I really appreciate your sharing some insights into this market, and I promise to be more respectful of that package when it arrives and to think about how it got to my house. So I thank you for the time this morning.
Joe, thank you very much. Great questions. Appreciate it.
All right. Good to talk to you. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.